spoken in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, because according to Arjuna's understanding, Krishna had recommended two things, both work and the renunciation of work. Krishna explains that there is one goal to those two things, but actually there are two ways of achieving that one goal, the active path and the inactive path, but the goal is the same. In addition to there being two ways that one can achieve, nice, so nice, too much nice. Plus going back to Godhead. Join for 1 day, 2 days, 1 week, or even more. So in addition to that, one could either progress on the path, on the active way, or the inactive way. There are different stages on this path. On the jnana stage, where one is in the mode of goodness, one is not troubled by any improper activities or desires, because one is in the mode of goodness, and one, sattvam sanjayate jnanam, one is situated on the platform of knowledge, because the mode of goodness brings forth knowledge. But on the stage prior to the mode of goodness is the stage of karma, or the mode of passion. And if one takes an inactive path, while one is troubled by the mode of passion, then one will have unlimited problems. And therefore Krishna has said that kamendriyani samyam ya asti manasa smaran indriyartan vamudatma nitya achar so uchite. That one who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on the sense objects, certainly deludes himself, and he is called a pretender. He has mitya achar. His activities are false. Externally, he is renounced, but internally, because of the mode of passion, he is not renounced. So therefore, Krishna is condemning this inactive path completely. Actually, we'll find out later in the fifth chapter that he condemns this inactive path completely, whether one is on the stage of karma or on the stage of jnana, the mode of passion or the mode of goodness. Why? Because the senses need activities, because the soul is active. This is the point that came out in yesterday's verses. The soul is active. Therefore, while getting purified, one has to be able to use the senses so that they elevate him. And that is karma yoga. And if he renounces, as Arjuna is explaining that he wants to renounce and go and live in the forest by begging, if one renounces activity in that way, he's going to get himself in unlimited trouble. Unlimited trouble. Because the soul is active, the senses also demand activity. So better, as Krishna ends the section that we read yesterday, perform your prescribed duties, for doing so is better than not working. For one cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. And then, did we read 3:9?
No.
We should have actually. Work! So the prescribed duties must be performed, because one can't even maintain his body without prescribed duties. And in what mood should one do his prescribed duties in? Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. So one should do his prescribed duties as a sacrifice or for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Why? Otherwise, that work will cause bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, the satisfaction of Vishnu, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. So this is the platform of detached activity for the pleasure of Krishna. One may be attached to the activity, but he's doing it and offering the results for the pleasure of Vishnu or Krishna. And that type of activity, with that consciousness, causes one no bondage. And it is called nishkam karma, because one's karma or work is done nishkam, without expectation of any desires. So this is actually what Krishna is recommending, the basic recommendation in the Bhagavad Gita, that one work as a sacrifice for Krishna. One dedicate all his activities for Krishna and be detached from the results. And all benedictions and all good for the living entity will come from that. So, what happens if someone is attached to his work and the fruit of his work? Generally in this world, no one will do anything unless he gets some benefit. And even devotees tend to calculate at times, what can I get from this for myself? Of course, this isn't very high quality devotion. But what does it mean? What is a person who has attachment? That means the mode of passion. Because from the mode of passion, attachment develops. What does a person do if he has that? We've said that he shouldn't take to the inactive path. That will cause complete ruination. He shouldn't become a Mayavadi sannyasi or a jnani living in the forest and meditating. Certainly not. But what should he do? Now, in the next verses, from 10 to 16, Krishna is going to explain some of the lower rungs or steps of the yoga ladder. Because this nishkam karma yoga is karma yoga, but it is advanced karma yoga. Where someone who performs it is actually not attached to the material world. And this type, that nishkam karma yoga, will bring liberation, actually. If one takes the next step, which will be described a little later. But the entire yoga ladder is going to be described now, in the succeeding verses and the succeeding chapters. Now, for us to understand the yoga ladder, the first thing that we should understand is why the souls are in the material world. It is because we have, somehow or another, Krishna, Anadi Bahir Mukh, that the souls, Krishna Bhuli Se Jeev, Anadi Bahir Mukh, somehow or another, since time immemorial, the jeev, bhada jeevas, they have the desire to enjoy themselves independently of Krishna. So as soon as a soul wants to enjoy himself independently of Krishna, thinking of himself as the enjoyer, and he wants to get some pleasure out of the material world, he wants to get some pleasure independent of serving Krishna, he is immediately, instantaneously in the material world. And for the souls who are in the material world, Krishna has provided systems so that they can elevate themselves and get out of the material world. But the root cause or the root characteristic of someone in the material world is that he desires to enjoy himself as much as possible. That is actually ignorance. Because we are not independent enjoyers. The Ishwaraham Maham Bogi Siddaham Balavan Suti. If someone is thinking that that I am enjoying Ishwaraham, I am the controller, Aham Bogi, I am the enjoyer. This is actually the definition of the demonic nature, born of the mode of ignorance, because it's ignorant of our real eternal relationship with Krishna. So, this is the tendency born of ignorance. Now, Krishna sends the Vedic literatures and the entire Vedic culture to elevate one. And this is how it works. The first step to become a human, to become elevated from this mode of ignorance where one just wants to enjoy any way he can. Practically speaking, that's animal life. One does anything, everything. There are no restrictions. If it brings pleasure, one does it. Sensual pleasure, one just simply does it. This is animal life, completely bound, controlled by the mode of ignorance. Now, if someone will agree to get his sense gratification, not in an unrestricted way, but according to the authority of the Vedic literature, if he will accept the Vedic literature as the authority of how he gets his sense gratification, he is still attached. He's still desiring sense gratification, but he's allowing his attainment of sense gratification to be restricted. And therefore, he's considered a human being. One who lives the life of restricted sense gratification is a human being because he acknowledges that there are other values, other important, other than his own selfish pleasures. If to live in any community, you have to give up your own selfish desires for the mutual welfare of others even. You can't do anything and everything you want at any time you want. No, you have to agree to allow restriction in your plans to enjoy yourself. Now when this restriction and how one enjoys himself is regulated by the Vedic scriptures, that is the Vedic culture. And that acceptance of authority, higher authority that regulates one's sense gratification is very beneficial for the living entity because he's accepting authority. It's a step towards accepting the supreme authority of Krishna. And this is what happens. Now, in the 9th, 10th verse, Krishna explains the basic principle of the Vedic culture. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this jagat sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." So the living entities in the material world, they want to enjoy, they want to live happily. So when they do this enjoyment according to this Vedic system, where there are prescribed duties, where they perform jagas, then they become, their happiness is superior. They actually become happy. It's actually superior. And actually, their happiness will lead them towards liberation. And this is the benefit of accepting the Vedic system to become happy as opposed to unrestricted sense enjoyment. Because if one engages in unrestricted sense enjoyment, one simply goes down. One goes down and becomes more and more miserable. And if one accepts the Vedic formulas and performs prescribed duties that will bring him sense gratification, still he'll get sense gratification, but gradually everything will be bestowed upon him for his happiness. And in addition, he will move towards liberation. The demigods, text 11, being pleased by sacrifices. So when one accepts the Vedic formulas, one performs jagas, one performs sacrifices to please the demigods. So the demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. And thus, By cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. So this is a very nice system. But of course, it is not actually Krishna's desire that the living entities get material prosperity and have great cooperation between men and demigods, and that this isn't Krishna's desire. Krishna's desire is that everyone goes back home, back to Godhead. But this is the yoga ladder. The Vedic culture allows everyone, regardless of his position, to gradually make progress. And step by step, go back home, back to Godhead. So here is what Krishna does for those living entities who are attached, but yet will accept the Vedic system to regulate themselves. So there are two basic stages in what Krishna is describing over here. Now the first stage is, say if someone wants something temporary in this life, one wants something temporary, one wants health, or one wants a beautiful wife, or a lot of wealth, or he wants good family members, and he wants his number of cows to increase and the crops to be good, like that. This is the basic things that people want. They want something right now. So one performs, one goes to his priest, and one is a householder, etc. So one goes to the priest, and there's a prescribed duty of Vedic Jagga for this. So he goes, and the Brahmins tell him to sit over here and pour so much ghee. The Brahmin will pour so much ghee and recite mantras, and he will speak some philosophy, like that. Now, gradually, by the process of these Vedic sacrifices, one gets the material rewards that one wants, and one's faith in the Vedas increase, and one's faith in the Brahmins who are performing the sacrifice increase. So as one goes through the Vedic formulas, one also hears of different types of sacrifices. One hears of a better type of sacrifice that will bring one a higher type of happiness. So instead of only hearing about happiness in this life, where one can get wealth, he can get land, unlimited land in Gujarat, and have unlimited grains growing in there, and have unlimited children who are all healthy and strong. Good, keep going. This is why we brought you close, so we can all enjoy. So one hears, one has that, right? But then one hears of superior happiness. Of course, it's hard to imagine something superior than being in Gujarat. But one hears of Swagaloka, that if one performs this type of sacrifice, that not only one gets good health and a wife and this and that, but one gets a lifespan of thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And the standard of enjoyment in Swaga is so much superior. And there are beautiful, beautiful apsaras, and they're playing musical instruments, and there's gardens that are so sweet, and there's big fruits and flowers and flowing streams, and everything is so enjoyable. So by hearing of this standard of sense gratification, one's desire becomes elevated. And within this type of a desire is the understanding that, yes, I will go to Swarga in my next life, which means that I'm accepting in principle that I am not my body, that I am a spirit soul, that I am eternal. And according to what I do in this life, I will go up or I will go down, but I am eternal. So this is a higher standard. And one is making progress, actually, instead of just going for benefit in this life and performing yagas in that way. One starts to perform yagas for the future, and that are even a higher standard of happiness. So this comes by doing one's prescribed duties, by accepting the Vedic system of happiness, by association of the priests, the Brahmin priests who are preaching all the time, especially if they're judges, they always must speak some philosophy. So then, the next stage is that not only we already heard in the second chapter where Krishna said, Triguna Vishaya Veda Nis Triguna Bhavarjana, that you should disregard the Vedas because they deal basically with the three modes of material nature. But actually the Vedas don't really only deal with the three modes of material nature, but 96% of the Vedas deal with the three modes of material nature and extending our happiness. The remaining 4% of the Vedic literature is Jnanakanda or Upasanakanda, where if one hears these sections of the Vedas, the Upanishads, etc., one gets a completely different idea of happiness, even better than the land and the wife and the health and the children that one can attain in this life. And even better than attaining Swargaloka with its gardens and beautiful women and beautiful instruments and long life. There is something even greater than that. And this is understanding. You already have developed faith in the soul because you're talking about becoming elevated to Swarga. So then one understands that the level of pleasure that the soul can achieve if he's free completely from passion and goodness and ignorance is even higher. And with this knowledge, one begins to get detached from all kinds of material pleasures, and he begins to go from the mode of passion to the mode of ignorance. Excuse me. To the mode of goodness. To transcendental knowledge, he becomes elevated from passion to goodness. And that means that naturally his attachment to matter and his will decrease, and he becomes detached. And then the more detached he becomes, the more peaceful he becomes, and the more detached he becomes, the more knowledge he obtains like that. So, Krishna isn't interested, actually, in what the 10th and 11th verses are saying. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, will also please you, and thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. This is the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, which has to be transcended by following the Vedic process. Now, here's more on how this process works. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jaga, so you want some material happiness, so you perform some jaga to the demigods, and they are satisfied, they supply all necessities of life. But you have to pay the demigods something. So you have to give them their share of what you've obtained. So if you try to take from the demigods, if you're so passionate that you just want and don't want to give to the demigods, if you want to keep everything for yourself, Krishna explained, but he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. So by this process of giving to the demigod, one is becoming detached. One has to give to a superior power. And this is the basic Vedic system that one, and this is the difference between looking for sense gratification without the Vedas and with the Vedas. It's because without the Vedas, you're just thinking that what I want is supreme and most important. And no one is better than me. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. Like that. I am this, I am that. But in the Vedic system, you're acknowledging that the sense gratification is not coming from my own effort. And this demonic ignorant mood is the mood that is more and more pervading the world today, that if I work hard by my own efforts, I will get success. By me, my strength, my power, my intelligence, my family members, I will get success. But the Vedic system teaches that success comes down from the demigods. So it is superior because it is acknowledging a higher authority, some beings more powerful than ourselves, which in modern science today, in modern civilization, there is no acknowledgement of anyone more powerful than ourselves. We are the most powerful. There is no God. This is the preaching. This is the philosophy. We will create deathlessness. We will produce food from nothing. Or we will do it. We will cure all diseases. You don't have to pray to God. There's no one superior. We will give you artificial lungs, artificial kidneys, artificial brains, artificial hearts. You don't need God. Nothing. Nothing from above. We will do it by virtue of science. So therefore, this is a completely demonic mentality because it refuses to acknowledge anything superior, any power that is superior to us. So here's the Vedic system that will step by step bring us to the point, first because of our selfish material desires born of the motive passion, but at least we acknowledge superior authority, that we can't get our desires met without superior authority. So gradually, by this Vedic process, it elevates one. Now, Krishna says here, just to make sure that the point comes across, if you take from the demigods without giving back, they are superior. You are taking from them. So therefore, bhunkte stena eva saha, yo bhunkte stena. You are a thief. Stena means a thief. And therefore, what happens to thieves? They will be punished. So the element of you do it, you give to the demigods out of fear of punishment. It makes you're detached. You have to give something, so you're detached. But it is not the highest consciousness. It is just based on fear of being punished like a thief. But still, it is a start. And some detachment is coming, and some acceptance of higher authority is there, which are both gradually, as the ninth verse, as the tenth verse says, that the Vedas will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So that liberation is ultimately the goal of the Vedas, but it's a step-by-step gradual process. So, this is the Vedic system. But Arjuna, remember this is being spoken to Arjuna in the battlefield, who in many ways is trying to avoid fighting in the battlefield. So Krishna is telling him, by telling him this karmakanda system, Krishna is telling him that if you even need your necessities of life, everyone needs necessities of life, so you have to do your prescribed duties. And in your case, it's fighting. So Arjuna starts to think, well, what happens if I go to the forest? If I go back to my original plan of going to the forest, therefore I will get the necessities of life because I'll just live by begging. I've already said that I'm ready to live by begging. So I'll get my necessities of life and so I'll be able to eat very nicely by begging. I'll have so many chapatis and there's always feasts and so many good things are going on. I'll come to Vrindavan and there's so much sadhu seva in Vrindavan, so I won't have any problem about eating, and I won't get any sin, because I won't take part in this horrible battle. So therefore, I don't need to do my prescribed duties. I don't need to do such a sacrifice. So therefore, Krishna speaks the 13th verse in answer to that. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. In other words, sacrifice is still going to be needed, Arjun. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So even if you live by begging, if you are not eating prasadam, if you are not eating the remnants of food from a sacrifice, then you will still get sin, O Arjuna. So there is no escaping it. You have to do your prescribed duties. And from that, all good results will come. You won't even be able to eat without sin if you avoid your prescribed duties and just go to the forest. Now, and 16 describe a process. Regulated activities, 14 and 15. All living bodies subsist on food grains. So Arjuna was trying to think how he could become independent again. So here Krishna explains these verses to show how we are not at all independent, because even for our eating, this will actually be explained in the 15th chapter, when Krishna explains how the rain and the fire of digestion and the moonlight which nourishes the vegetables, they all come from me, they are my energy. And he also explains, I am the bhokta, I am the maintainer of everyone. So actually Krishna is maintaining us, and he's doing it through the demigods, etc. So now these verses will bring it actually up to the point of how we are dependent on Krishna. Before we just heard how we're dependent on the demigods for our happiness. But now it's going to take it a little further. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of jaga, sacrifice. And jaga is born of prescribed duties. Regulated activities, as Prabhupada says over here, it means prescribed duties, are prescribed in the Vedas. And the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. In other words, Vishnu, what comes from Vishnu according to this system, will work backwards. That from Vishnu, from his breathing, comes the Vedas. By the breathing of Vishnu comes the Vedas. And then, what comes from the Vedas? One's karma, or prescribed duties. And then if one is doing one's prescribed duties, one also will be doing jaga, or sacrifice. And then, from doing sacrifices, what comes? Rain. And then, from rain comes food grains. So just by your eating, you are eating, but the food that you are eating, that you are depending upon for your life, it comes from the rain, it is based on the rain. As Prabhupada used to say, they cannot produce food grains in their factories, and you cannot eat the nuts and bolts that they produce. We are dependent on grains which come from rain. And where does rain come from? It comes from sacrifices, the piety produced from sacrifices when the demigods are pleased, like that. And where do the sacrifices come from? They come from prescribed duties. And where do the prescribed duties come from? They come from the Vedas. And where do the Vedas come from? They come from Vishnu. So therefore, consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So it is actually Krishna here in this verse is equating the acts of sacrifice that produce the rains, that produce the grains, which keep you alive, is actually the all-pervading transcendence, which is ultimately Krishna, is in that act. So therefore you are dependent on Krishna. And when one develops this knowledge, that it is not only the demigods that he is dependent on for his food, but ultimately it's Krishna. And then he directs his activities, even though he may be attached to the activities. Even though he may be attached to enjoying the fruits of his activities, when he makes the goal in his consciousness of attaining Krishna, even though he still may be attached to the fruits of his activities, when his goal becomes transcendental, then his karma is no longer called karma kanda, but it is called karma yoga. Even though he may be attached to the fruit of the work, even though he may be attached to the work itself, but because the yoga is there, the linking with the transcendence is there, therefore it has become karma yoga. It is yoga. Before this point, unless a transcendental objective is ascertained as the goal, there is no question of yoga. Just because someone may be sitting in some asanas, and as Prabhupada used to call it, nose pressing and this type of thing, and twisting one's body, that is not what yoga is. But yoga is the connection. When the goal is the supreme, when the goal is transcendental, then when one's activities can become yoga. So this is how to make one's yoga, one's karma, bring it from the platform of karma kanda to karma yoga. And then Krishna explains in 17, my dear Arjuna, excuse me, 16, no, 16, yes. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sins. He's going to go down because he's not accepting any authority. He has unrestricted sense enjoyment, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. He's a complete materialist. He's living the purpose of his life. Even though his life is so short, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, 70 years, he is thinking that the purpose of this existence, and I am the center of the world, so the purpose of the world is just simply to satisfy my senses. Such a person lives in vain. So this is decrying those who do not follow the Vedic system of sacrifice. On one end, if one does follow, one will become elevated and ultimately attain liberation. And if one doesn't follow, he is leaving a life full of sin, he's living in vain, he's living simply for the satisfaction of the senses, he's foolish, he's misusing his human life, and therefore he's doomed and condemned by Krishna himself over here. Okay, are there any questions about anything in this chapter that we covered? Marsh?
This is karma kanda. What is it? Is there two divisions of karma yoga? Nishkam karma yoga and sakam karma yoga and sakam karma yoga. Sakam karma yoga is karma kanda.
No.
Karma kanda is something else.
Karma kanda is when you are just trying to attain, you're practicing and following of the Vedic rituals is just to attain material sense gratification. There is no yoga. There is no transcendental objective. So it is just following the karma kanda section. Sakam karma yoga is when you're following, you're doing your prescribed duties and you're attached to the fruits of your prescribed duties. You want to enjoy yourself, but you want to attain the supreme, but you have motive passion. So therefore, naturally, one is attached to the fruit. And nishkam karma is when you've acknowledged that the supreme is the goal. At sakam karma, you've acknowledged the supreme, either as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagawan as the goal. in Sakam Karma and Nishkam Karma Yoga. But in Nishkam Karma Yoga, you're detached. You're not interested in attaining the fruits. You're working dutifully. And that leads, that dutiful work will lead to more and more knowledge. That is the glory, because the mode of goodness will develop, and from the mode of goodness.
It's not a different process, it's just the difference.
And consciousness. It's different steps on the ladder. And this nishkam karma, where one is detached completely from the fruit of his work, and he's in the situated in the mode of goodness. Why is he detached from the fruit of his work? Is because he knows he's not his body. He has that knowledge. And therefore, he's acting in such a detached fashion. So he's acting on the jnana platform. So this is the process of attaining the jnana platform through the process of karma or activity. And if one, on the other hand, tries to attain the jnana platform through not working or inactivity, one will fail because it's so difficult. And this is what's been explained earlier, because you have to be active.
In the platform of Sakama Karma, Karma Yoga, it seems that he doesn't do anything different from the karma.
Except that he's acknowledged a transcendental goal and he's trying for that. That is the difference. His consciousness is different. And also, someone nishkam karma yoga, he may be completely detached, situated, fully realized that he's not his body, and he'll still maybe be doing the same thing. An example of this is Bharat Maharaj. In the Bhagavatam it describes that he performed all the sacrifices to the demigods. But he was thinking of the demigods not as independent of Krishna, but he was thinking of them as Krishna's empowered agents in this world, as parts of Krishna's body. So when he was worshipping the demigods, he was actually worshipping Krishna. And therefore, the result of that type of worship was transcendental ecstasy for him. It wasn't material benefit, it wasn't going to swarga, it wasn't any, he didn't get any fruits from his work. It was transcendental ecstasy. Because everything depends on the consciousness that one works in. That is what we are trying to do. Not change activity as much as change consciousness, elevate consciousness. Not to give up activity, but do activity on the jnana, at least on the transcendental platform.
Would there then be any difference between nishkam karma and bhakti?
When? Yes, something.
What is this?
When one is still attached, see, bhakti yoga is transcendental. It is beyond the modes of material nature. Nishkam karma is in the mode of goodness. It is detached work. But one is detached from the fruits of the work, but one may be attached to the work itself. So when one doesn't become attached, one gives up attachment to the work, and one is just attached to doing what Krishna wants, then it becomes bhakti. Using this, although Prabhupada sometimes calls nishkam karma bhakti karma yoga and uses them synonymously, but this is a technical distinction. So this is, again, I've repeated this a few times, this is the difference between yat karosi rashnasi yat jahosi vidati yat, that all that you do, all that you work, you're already working, right? So do it for me. You're already giving charity, so give it for me. You're already doing sacrifices, so do it for me. So the attachment is there to the work. So whatever you're doing, you do it for Krishna. That's more nishkam karma. And if you're giving, say if you're doing the work and keeping 80% for yourself and giving Krishna 20%, that would be more sakam karma.
Okay.
But when you're completely detached, there's a story that Prabhupada told of one of his godbrothers, that he would work, he had a job, he had some service, government service or something, and he would work and bring the paycheck to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and give it all to him. And then his wife would come and get some allowance from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was giving everything. One time, one person told that to Prabhupada, I heard that one of your godbrothers would do this, and then she would have to come and beg Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur for some money so that they could live. And Prabhupada said, no, she did not have to beg. But she would come and get the money from him. He was doing everything. He was doing the work, doing his duty for family, etc. And he was giving everything. That would be like Nishkam Karma Yoga. It is a glorious platform. It is actually the platform that Krishna is basically recommending. Well, there's this, any demigod worshippers here who know the system? But you have to give a portion of the fruits of your work to the demigods. That's the basic idea. And there's that's how Hiranyakashipu, he was trying to get even with the demigods, kill them. What he did was tried to kill the Brahmins. And then with the Brahmins out of the way, there'll be no sacrifices, and the demigods can't exist without the portions of their sacrifice. They need it to eat. Like this. So they have to get. Okay.
But you hurry, and then.
The system in this chapter seems, in some ways, quite glorious, taking animals to person, gradually uplifting them. But, we also know that our acharyas sometimes call them pots of poison.
What? Call them what?
Karmakanda, Dhanakanda, Kevala, Visharakanda. So could you explain
which acharya was that? Yeah, then there's a famous story that where Prabhupada was in the train, and some people came in and started discussing Bhagavad Gita with Prabhupada, and they told Prabhupada that Krishna wants karma yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is recommending karma yoga. And Prabhupada said, karma yoga is for fools. So, when the acharyas are talking about karma kanda, jnana kanda, kevala, okay. So karma kanda is not even yoga, first of all. So, it is a part of poison because it keeps you in the material world. And Jnanakanda brings you to the point of merging with Brahman. This is the Karmakanda, Jnanakanda sections of the Vedas. So that's even worse than Karmakanda because you merge in with Brahman and you lose your opportunity to do service. So we shouldn't become attracted by this by taking the step-by-step process. We should immediately begin karma yoga, at least. But nowhere it says that karma yoga is a pot of poison. Karma yoga is sometimes considered bhakti and is sometimes not considered bhakti. When it is considered bhakti, it's considered bhakti because it leads to bhakti. We have to come to the point of bhakti. That is the goal of surrendering to Krishna everything. Because karma yoga leads to bhakti, it is often considered bhakti. Chaitanya.
Is this correct? Karma yoga in general. Karma yoga is a mode of ignorance?
No.
Excuse me, karma kanda.
We'll call it passion. Below that, this is more my analysis, though, I have to admit that. that ignorance means that you're just unrestrictedly enjoying like an animal. And that must lead you down, lead you down. That's what Prabhupada described. Then when you accept karmakanda, it's passion. Your only interest is your material attachments. Then when you get a little knowledge into that, which means some shadings of the mode of goodness, then you can do karma yoga, even though you're still attached due to your motive, one's mode of passion also. Then as one's mode of goodness increases, one is elevated in detachment, and also when he's detached, knowledge comes, more and more knowledge comes, and therefore it becomes nishkam karma. And then it goes from there too, further, further.
So then, from your analysis, karma kanda and sakam karma yoga is in more passion.
But there's a difference though, because there's knowledge, that means there's mode of goodness that's come. There's, of course there's passion, there's attachment. Attachment comes. Yeah.
But nishkam karma is in more goodness.
Yeah.
And bhakti yoga is transcendental.
I would like to know where do the four regulative principles come in? Could you perform karma yoga without following the four regulative principles?
Not if you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness.
No, but if you speak speaking, so if you're doing your work.
Yes, if we speak strictly in terms of doing work.
Then I mean, if you do your work beautifully, one is to enjoy the results, but recognizing the higher authority and giving some of the results of your work.
Yeah.
But not following strictly the, like, the rules in your life, what would that be?
Well, shouldn't take initiation yet. That's one thing it shouldn't be. I heard Prabhupada say, if you're not following the four rules, no one can help you. Because sex life, intoxication, meeting, gambling, they fix you in the bodily concept of life. So, one can make advancement in the sense that by giving to Krishna what one is not following properly, one will come to the one if Krishna allows will hopefully come to the point of following properly. But you can't go beyond following properly until you follow properly. Maharaj, you like that?
Wouldn't the prescribed duties also entail what ashram one did? Isn't that part of the prescribed duties?
Yeah.
So, whether it would be karma kanda, karma yoga, etc., there would be prescribed duties.
Yes.
Which would entail certain principles.
But
they may not be the same as a Vaishnava.
Right. These are vice. Yes.
But there would be some prescription to be hostile life, whether it be as strict as we have. It would be in the scriptures. What it would be. What would be. You have to follow that.
Any other questions?
This is the Vedic system of elevating the living entity from our ignorance.
Let me just add one other point. That this whole system, all this gradual process is there, but we should also remember what Krishna wants. At the end he's going to say, Sarvadamam Pratyaja, just get rid of all this and just surrender to me. And I'll protect you from all the sinful reactions. So you don't have to worry about giving the demigods their share so that you don't get caught as a thief. You don't have to worry about anything. Just surrender to me. So as Maharaj is pointing out, the Vaishnava principle is really that. You do what Krishna wants us to do and avoid the whole. And therefore, because that's what Krishna is going to reveal right in the very end. But that's actually what's on his mind all the way through. Therefore, Prabhupada very kindly, in all the purports, doesn't give us the opportunity to get off track and say, well, Krishna wants me to do prescribed duties and do Vedic yogas for the demigods, because in Kali Yuga no one has the intelligence to actually wield their way through these different complicated processes. So therefore, Prabhupada, in every purport, just tells us bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. But Krishna says Buddha Yoga Karma, and Prabhupada says bhakti, 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 bhakti. Bhakti, what Krishna says you should do jagas, Prabhupada says Sankirtan jaga. Because he wants us to make sure that we know what he doesn't want us to be misled. Because this is Krishna's intimate desire. Rather than covering Krishna's desire, he's revealing Krishna's desire, most intimate desire. I'm sorry.
You say it's actually the effect of the Maha Mantra that people are. If
the desire to do bhakti, that was my question to you. Yeah. Chanting the holy name, instead of getting faced by yogi and the result of yogi, people get the face by giving pure heart. Because in Kali Yuga, no one can do these things properly. So if we just take to chanting Hare Krishna and following the process, we'll go through all the different stages. Well, we start attached. We end up detached, and we end up attached to Krishna's lotus feet. Just by chanting Hare Krishna, everything will occur.
Who is it? One who chants
But what if we, whatever advancement we have when we begin in this life, it's either coming in one out of two ways. It's coming from our previous life, or it's coming by the mercy of the Vaishnavas in this life. So sometimes it is said that, and sometimes Prabhupada said that no one can, because it says that no one can take the Krishna consciousness without having performed pious activities in previous life, and Prabhupada said, I have created those pious activities in this life. By the mercy of the Vaishnava, everything can happen.
And it says that you have to have some piety to be able to before you even have to come in contact
with this. No. We should look at it more the other way. That it is just His mercy. I have no piety. It's just His mercy. He has saved me. To which understanding you like? It's due to my piety, I have come in contact with the Guru. Okay, it's time. So tomorrow, do the next section.